V'dos Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham holid et Yitzchak. These are the chronicles, the times, the children of Yitzchak ben Avraham, Yitzchak Avinu. Avraham holid et Yitzchak. Tell you what the commentaries say about that last phrase. But in the meantime, OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom, and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Toledot. We bench Rosh Chodesh this Shabbos. It is also the Mochor Chodesh Shabbat, and we'll talk about that also. Recording and first availability, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 27th day of Mar Cheshvan, 5778. Corresponding this year to November 16th. And without further ado, Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir Hama'alot Mima'amakim Karaticha Adonai. Adonai Shimavakoli Tehiena Aznecha Kashuvot Lakol Tachanunai. Imavonot Tishmarya Adonai Mia Amod Ki Imacha Hasalicha Lama'an Tivare. Kiviti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara v'ashivya ha-omedim ebein bayam uvein bayabasha. Hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem mitzara liyirvacha u'me'afela la'ora u'mishibud l'gu'ula hashta ba'agala u'vizman kariv v'nomar amen. Rashi comments on the opening verse of Toledot and elsewhere that when Sarah Imenu, when Avram and Sarah had a baby, at their advanced age, the scoffers of their time said that they found a baby someplace and took it and kept it as their own. What happened to verify to all who cared to witness it that Sarah actually was the mother of this child? She was able to nurse, and not only nurse her own child, but nurse other babies as well, indicating that her body had truly returned to its productive form, we'll say, and people acknowledged that she was in fact a mother. But then the scoffers said that when she was abducted to the palace of Avimelech, she became pregnant from him and not Avraham. Say our sources, a miracle occurred, and the baby Yitzchak was the spitting image of his father Avraham, to the point where everyone said, obviously Avraham fathered this child, look at the way he looks. Okay, we don't have any photographs from those days or paintings, so we don't know what Avraham Avinu and Yitzchak Avinu looked like, but there are definitely children who look exactly like one of their parents, and this one helped quiet the scoffers of their time. So that's where we are holding. I mentioned that we bench Rosh Chodesh this Shabbat, and Rosh Chodesh is Motzoi Shabbat, Saturday night, Sunday. And therefore, let's go back a step. Mar Cheshvan this year has 29 days, which is its regularly assigned number. Kislev will have 30, which is its regularly assigned number. That means that this year is designated as Keseder or Kisidran, meaning in order. Exactly what the original allocation of days per month, not more and not less. There are years when we need an extra day. Technically, it's in order to be able to go from one year Rosh Hashanah to the next year Rosh Hashanah, and that extra day is the 30th of Mar Cheshvan, not this year. When there is a 30th of Mar Cheshvan, then Rosh Chodesh Kislev will be 2 days. But because there's only 29 days in Mar Cheshvan this year, Rosh Chodesh Kislev is a single day, namely Sunday, Saturday night Sunday. Okay, when a year needs an extra day, the year is called Shalem, full, complete. And when we need to take away a day, the day that falls out is the 30th of Kislev, and then the year is designated as chaser, deficient or missing. The result of this, by the way, for those who might be interested, and even for those who are not interested, is that unlike the January-February civil year, we'll call it, where there are 365 days in a year, or in a leap year, 366, and that is the total of your variation. A Jewish year can have 354, which is its norm, 353 if it loses a day, and 355 if it gains a day. In years where an extra month of Adar is added, it is a 30-day month that is added, the result of which is that Jewish years can not only have 353, 354, and 355 days, but there are Jewish years that have 383, 384, and 385. So Jewish years come in 6 different lengths. The juggling and the exact patterns of these years results in keeping pace with the solar calendar, even though our months are based on the moon. Okay, so much for that. Let's begin with the opening verses of Toledot, which tell us that Yitzchak married Rivka at the age of 40. He was at the age of 40. I remember, as well as many people remember, being taught as a kid that Rivka was 3 years old when she married Yitzchak. And that is based on the fact that at the very end of Vayera, after the Akedah, which happened when Yitzchak was 37 years, because Sarah died at that time, and she was 127 at the time of her death, and she was 90 at the birth of Yitzchak. So it's easy to compute that Yitzchak was 37 years old at the Akedah. Then the Torah tells us at the end of Parshat Vayera that Avraham heard about the family development of his brother Nahor, including a son, Betuel, who had a daughter named Rivka. And those who say that this passage of Avraham finding out about the family happened at the Akedah, and at the time of the Akedah, and that's when Rivka was actually born. That's where the 3 years come from, because this week's Seder tells us that Yitzchak was 40 years old when he got married. On the other hand, there are other commentaries who use, let's call it, other chronological glitches in the three-year theory and conclude that Rivka was 14 or 14 and a half when she married Yitzchak. Be that as it may, they were married for 20 years without a child, and the Torah tells us that they prayed together, opposite each other, and God answered his prayer, namely Yitzchak's, and Rivka became pregnant. Right away, the Torah then tells us that she had a very unpleasant pregnancy with a lot of turmoil inside of her. Vatelech lidrosh et Hashem. She went to query the known prophet at the time, Shem, the long-lived son of Noach. He actually outlived Avraham Avinu. And God says to Rivka, the reason for your turmoil, and he said it through Shem, is Shnei Goyim Bivitnech, there are two nations that are developing in your womb, Ushnei Leumim, two nationalities, Mimeayech Yiparedu, will emerge and separate from your womb. Ulom Milaom Ye'ematz, one will ascend above the other, alternately. Virav Ya'avod Sa'ir, and ultimately, the older one will be subservient to the younger one. Then the Torah tells us that she gave birth, and it was twins. The first one to come out was ruddy in complexion, reddish and reddish hair, and they named him Esav. Afterwards, his brother emerged from the womb, holding on to Esav's heel, and he was named Yaakov, which has the root of Akev, which is a heel. And the Torah tells us that Yitzchak was 60 years at the time. Then, fast forward, Vayigdalu Hana'arim, the boys grew up. Vayhi Esav Ish Yodea Tzayid, Esav became a knowledgeable hunter and a man of the field. And Yaakov was an Ish Tam, either a simple person or a pure person. Pure, I think, would be better. Yoshev Ohalim, dwelling in the tents. Commentaries say that that was a reference to his studiousness in learning the traditions and Torah of his father and grandfather. The Torah then tells us, Vayehav Yitzchak et Esav, Yitzchak loved Esav, Kitzayid Befiv, because he hunted and provided food for him, or, as some of the commentaries turned the word Tzayid to deceiving with his mouth. In other words, he would ask questions and he would say things that gave the impression that he was a righteous individual, when really that was far from the truth. Either way, Yitzchak favored him. V'Rivka ohevet et Yaakov. And Rivka, mother, loved Yaakov. Now, there is a lot said, which I'm not going to say, beyond the fact that the upbringing of Yaakov and Esav must have been very similar. Remember, not like Avraham, who had a son Yishmael by Hagar, and then a son Yitzchak by Rivka, by Sarah. Here we're talking about twins who shared a womb, who shared a father and a mother in Yitzchak and Rivka, and yet they diverge completely in personalities and in character traits. The Torah tells us that Yaakov was cooking a lentil stew. Commentaries explain that that was not just a cooking thing. That was his preparing a mourner's meal to be served to Yitzchak, because the day that we're talking about is the day that Avraham Avinu died at the age of 175. Until then, now if you follow the chronology, it would go like this. If Avraham lived to 175 and he gave birth to Yitzchak at 100, so, and Yitzchak fathered his twins when he was 60, that would mean that until Avraham's death at 175, 15 years passed. During those 15 years, Esav developed into the Ish Yodea Tzayid Ish Sadeh, the worldly hunter and adventurer, and Yaakov developed into the Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim. How that exactly happens during so similar a background is explained by professionals in the field of education and psychology and parenting, that it's not enough to look at the kinds of education a child was given. One needs to look at the personality of the child, and the same kind of education is not for everybody. So it could be that the boys were brought up in such a way where Yaakov became, let's call it, the Torah scholar that his father would like, and Esav just went in a totally different direction, perhaps with the same kind of education. This is all speculation, and I need to be careful, sometimes I'm not careful enough, to distinguish between what's written in the Torah and what our tradition passes down through the generations. Back to the porridge for the lentil stew for a moment, and back to the beginning of the show. If you haven't figured it out till now, the opening music is the theme introduction to the show MasterChef, and I chose it because my eldest daughter, Miri, told me that in her new shul in the Makor Chaim area, they are having a kiddush this Shabbat with competition for cholent. Different people are making cholent for Shabbos morning, and they're going to be at different tables, and people will be able to sample this one, that one, that one, that one, the other one. I don't know how many cholents will be in the competition. And they're going to have some kind of voting or consensus as to what's the tastiest cholent or the best cholent. And that was chosen as the theme for this Shabbos' Kiddush because of Yaakov's cooking of the Nezid Adashim. So rather than have a cook-off for lentil stew or lentil soup, they decided to go in the direction of cholent. And the question that remains is cholent a single syllable word as I pronounce it in my family? Or is it cholent, which is distinctly a two syllable word? And I don't have the answer. I could be oblivious to everybody else and say, obviously, the correct way to pronounce it is the way that I do, which is cholent. But I give the credence to the idea that perhaps it is cholent. I don't even know the origin of the word. It does not sound Hebrew. In any event, that's why I chose the theme from MasterChef at the beginning of the show. So, I feel like I'm calling my own children or grandchildren, where I go through two or three names sometimes before I get to the correct one. Esav, Vayosed Yaakov Nazid, Yaakov was cooking the lentil stew. Vayavo Esav min hasadev hu ayef, Esav returned from the field and he was exhausted. And he sees this fragrant smelling stew on the stove. And he says to Yaakov, Ha'aliteni na min ha'adom ha'adom hazeh, give me some of that grub to eat, ki ayef anochi, for I am tired. Alkein karashimo Edom, that's why he was also called Edom, which is reddish, because he probably got flushed when he was out of sorts. That's my own editorial comment. Vayomer Yaakov, michrach hayom et bechoratecha li. Sell me, turn over to me the birthright. Esav came out first, Yaakov followed him, and Yaakov, knowing that the birthright, and he was not, according to the commentaries, concerned with a double portion of physical inheritance, what he was concerned with was the role of the Bechor of each family in the service of God. And he felt that his brother Esav was not appropriate for that, and that maybe he was. Esav reacts by saying, Hinei anochi holech lamut, I'm about to drop dead. V'lama zali b'chora. Why do I need a first birthright? A birthright. And commentaries say that this is a demonstration of a total lack of belief in a world to come, because a person who believes in a world to come would not make such a crass statement of, I'm about to die, so who needs anything? That's spoken by a kofer, one who denies God's existence and denies that there is anything after this life. Yaakov has Esav swear to him the Bechora. He gives him bread and the lentil stew, and according to commentaries, it was a kinyan that was made at this point, not a payment for it, because otherwise you can criticize Yaakov for taking advantage of Esav's fatigue and his hunger and getting the Bechorah cheap. They said, no, this was a token kinyan acquisition that was made, and the Bechorah went to Yaakov. As a result, Yaakov gives Esav the bread and the lentil stew, as I mentioned, as a token. Esav, vayochal, vayesht. He ate and he drank. Vayokom, vayelach, got up and went. Vayivez Esav et habechora. And Esav spurned, for lack of a better word, the birthright. That's the first indication that we have to the less than sterling personality of Esav. Later, when Esav says to himself that he plans to kill his brother Yaakov, albeit after his father Yitzchak dies, that also gives us a glimpse into his personality. And it sort of goes hand in hand with the fact that the Gemara on five different times refers to him as Esav HaRasha. Just a side point, grew up with a longtime friend who, when we were kids, whenever we learned the beginning of Toledot, he used to express his sympathy for dear Uncle Esav, who Nebuch got conned out of his birthright for porridge and then conned out of his blessing with the mother's assistance. And what did he do? And then when he found out that he was too late for the blessing, he cried and seemed genuinely put out by Yaakov's twice, whatever you want to call it. And the point that my friend was missing is that we have a rich tradition, which goes way back, that often will tell us things that are not spelled out in the written word, and they are part of our masoret, of our heritage, of our tradition. That Esav was wicked is one of those things, and that he did not manifest his evil personality until grandfather Avraham had died is a plus in his favor. But the fact that that's when he let loose does not speak well for him. And, as I indicated, these at least two places in the Torah where we have the indications that all was not Yitzchak, Avram Yitzchak Yaakov level of personality. We then have, in a couple of weeks, the reunion of Yaakov and Esav. And then again, we question the genuineness of his embrace and his kiss. And the Torah highlights that by the scribal tradition of writing the word Vayishakehu with dots above each letter. And there are significant differences of opinion as to whether it was sincere or not, or whether he changed his stripes or not. And the conclusion pretty much is, doesn't matter whether he was sincere at that moment or not, he hadn't changed his stripes. He was still the person that he is. You want to add to this the fact that when Esav realized he could not vanquish Yaakov, he encharged his son Eliphaz to do the job. And our tradition is that Eliphaz couldn't go through with killing Yaakov, but he stole everything that he had, making him poor, and an extremely poor person is like a dead person. And that was sort of a token fulfillment of Esav's desire to kill Yaakov. And then Eliphaz's son, Esav's grandson, became encharged with hatred of Yaakov and hatred of Yaakov's descendants, and attacked them for no good reason, and became the arch enemies of the Jewish people in the form of Amalek. Now, just add one thing, and I got this insight from Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Pupko the other day when we were talking about this topic. And he reminded me that there is a dichotomy to Esav's character which manifested itself in future generations. And that is that on the one hand, he was a Rasha, a wicked person. On the other hand, he was truly respectful of his father, and might have had other redeeming traits. The Torah tells us that he married at age 40 for the first time to be like his father, that he married someone who was not a Canaanite when he heard and understood that his father did not approve of Canaanite women. And even though on the negative side he didn't divorce his previous Canaanite wives, it's still spoken of in his credit that he wanted to please his father. The dichotomy I refer to is the fact that if an Edomite, which is a descendant of Esav, Edom is Esav, when if an Edomite comes to convert to Judaism, we accept him. And after the third, from the third generation on, he's totally, totally Jewish with no restrictions of marriage, except that which any convert would be restricted to. But he is not banned from Jewishness. On the other, because he is your brother. That's what the Torah says. Ki achichahu. On the other hand, Amalek is the archenemy, not just of the Jewish people, but of God as a result of that. And we are commanded to destroy the remnant of Amalek and blot out its memory. And God vows to pick up the fight as well. And it's, you know, Va'olu Moshim Bahar Tzion Lishpot Et Har Esav. There's a lot to be said about dual personality of Esav and the machria, the determining feature, which is negative. Let's leave it at that. I want to now jump towards the end of the Sedra with more questions than I have answers for, but maybe putting things in a certain perspective. The Torah tells us that Yitzchak was of an advanced age blind and apparently sensing the impending end to his life. So he calls to Esav, his oldest, and, as the Torah spelled out, his favorite, maybe, and tells him that he wants him to prepare a meal for him, and when he gets back from the hunt and the meal is prepared, he'll give him a blessing. Rivka Imenu, Yitzchak's wife, Esav's mother, Yaakov's mother, and the Torah makes a point that she was the mother of both of them, decides or is told, or both, that Yaakov should be the recipient of this blessing, that Yitzchak is, I don't know, misguided in his desire to bless Esav, which commentaries suggest was a genuine desire to help him straighten himself out. And Rivka had other plans, interestingly, as did Sarah. Avraham was loath to send out Yishmael, to the point where God had to tell him, listen to what Sarah tells you, and expel the Hagar and Yishmael. Yitzchak, in his calculation, wanted Esav to get that blessing, and Rivka said no, didn't say it to Yitzchak, but she engineered by having Yaakov get her two goats, and she prepared food from them, and goat skin was used to dress up his arms and his neck so that he would have a rough feel like Esav and not a smooth baby face kind of thing like Yaakov. And Yaakov hesitates, as certainly Yitzchak would have, and Yaakov, his main fear is being revealed as a deceiver and being cursed rather than blessed. Rivka says, Alai kilolatcha b'ni, if it shall be that you will be cursed, then I will take it upon myself. And Targum Unklus has an interesting presentation of what Alai kilolatcha b'li means, b'ni means. But as a result of her statement, Yaakov toes the mark, does everything that she tells them, and is convinced that this is a necessary thing to do and a correct thing to do. So the bottom line is Yaakov gets that bracha instead of Esav, and maybe in examining whether it was a proper thing to do or not, one might say, look at the result. Yes, Yaakov got the blessing. But look what happened. Yaakov, at Rivka's instigation, deceives his father Yitzchak with a goat and a garment. He's wearing the garment of Esav and goat skins to feel rough skin. So basically, Yaakov deceived his father with a goat and a garment. Or, to make it more poetic sounding, a goat and a coat. A generation later, when the brothers get rid of Yosef, they take a goat, they slaughter it, and dip Yosef's coat that Yaakov had given them, him, something that fanned their jealousy, in addition to the dreams. And they dipped the coat in the blood of the goat and presented it to Yaakov to say, this is what we found. What do you think happened to Yosef? And the conclusion was he was mauled and killed by a predator. So Yaakov was deceived by a goat and a coat, years after he deceived his own father with a goat and a coat. Now, if one would conclude from that, that's punishment in kind, mida keneged mida, and therefore conclude that he was wrong to have done what he did, then that really doesn't fit with Yitzchak confirming the bracha on Yaakov, giving him a further bracha known as Birchat Avraham, and making it clear that it is through Yaakov that Yitzchak's legacy is passed. So how do we say that he was wrong to do it? And if he wasn't wrong to do it, and especially the way that the Targum puts it, where he says Rivka was told by a prophecy, by Ruach HaKodesh, that she should do this, then certainly the question is, begs to be asked, why did Yaakov have such a miserable life, especially deceived by the coat and the goat, the goat and the coat, if he was beseder in doing it? That's the question. I think the question is better than any answer that I've ever heard of, because the question is, why did Yaakov have to receive the proper blessing that he was entitled to through deception? Why couldn't it have been that Yitzchak conferred the blessing upon Yaakov with full knowledge? But here's another catch. Not a catch. This is a mushal to what can this be compared to: a medication that a person must take, or an operation that a person must have, or a radiation treatment that a person must have to save his life, which have negative consequences and negative side effects. So a person can't say, I mean, he can say it, but it doesn't, it's a problem when a person says, I didn't abuse drugs, and therefore I'm suffering the consequences of the side effects of overuse of medication or narcotic or whatever. I did it under doctor's instructions that this would save my life. So why am I suffering from hair loss, or suffering from constant nausea, or suffering from headaches that won't go away, when I didn't do anything wrong? I did something to save my life. The answer, again, not the real answer, because I don't know the real answer, but part of the answer is that there are some times that you have to accept a bitter medicine with a bad taste in your mouth, with negative side effects, as a trade-off for the benefit that the medication or treatment provides. Yaakov needed a consequence or a set of consequences to offset the good that he got in the form of the Bechora and the Bracha, the blessing, and the birthright, and being the progenitor of the people of Israel. People of Israel, B'nai Yisrael, as we are called, is named after Yaakov. Not Avraham and not Yitzchak, but Yaakov. True, we repeatedly refer to Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoteinu, the God, our God and the God of our fathers, the God of Avraham, the God of Yitzchak, the God of Yaakov. But the bottom line is that we, the people of Israel, are named after Yaakov. So we can't say he was a bad guy for what he did. So why did he suffer? That's the question. Don't have a great answer for that. It's just the way life is sometimes, and maybe that's a lesson that we have to learn from it. Let me finish off with this Machar Chodesh business. The 29th of a Jewish month is followed by Rosh Chodesh, either the 30th of the same month, which is the first of 2 days Rosh Chodesh, or the first of the new month, which is Rosh Chodesh. So any way you put it, the 29th is always Erev Rosh Chodesh. When the 29th of the month falls out on Shabbat, we have what I will call a Mochar Chodesh situation. Mochar Chodesh means tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh. What is the significance of that? Our sages, when they composed which portion of the prophets shall be read attached to each weekly sedra, they said on special occasions the regularly scheduled weekly haftarah is preempted for the special. And we know this to be so on holidays and on Rosh Chodesh itself, and on Chanukah, and on Purim in Yerushalayim, which could be Shabbat, and on the four special Shabbatot of Shkalim, Zohar, Pora, and HaChodesh. And, okay, that's pretty much it. Except for Erev Rosh Chodesh. When Erev Rosh Chodesh falls on Shabbat, they said, here is a different portion of the prophets to read as the Haftarah, preempting the regular weekly portion. Now that's unique because Pesach and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur on Shabbat, obviously the Haftorah and the Torah reading change. But that an Erev, the day before something, should make a difference in the Haftorah, we don't have that. When Shavuot, for example, is Saturday night, Sunday, or in Chutz La'aretz, Saturday night, Sunday, Monday, then that Shabbat is Erev Yom Tov, but we don't change the regular weekly portion, the Haftorah of the week. It's regular, but Erev Rosh Chodesh they deem to be different. Now, the portion that they chose happens to begin with the words Mochar Chodesh, not the first words, but in the first verse. So it's certainly a good choice for it, but we need to ponder why they decided that not only will Rosh Chodesh get a special Haftorah when it's on Shabbat, but that Erev Rosh Chodesh does also. I speculate, I don't know for sure, I don't know at all, I speculate that it came in order to boost Rosh Chodesh in our eyes and in our awareness, which the holidays don't need. The holidays, we are well aware of them. Chanukah is Chanukah, and Shavuot is Shavuot, and Pesach is Pesach, and those days take care of themselves. Rosh Chodesh, which is predominantly a Beit HaMikdash, a temple-oriented holiday, can slip by with hardly a thought. Yes, we have, on Rosh Chodesh, we have Yalav Yavo, and we have Musaf, and we have Hallel, and a special Torah reading. But the day is almost business as usual, and we do have the practice of announcing on the Shabbat before Rosh Chodesh that Rosh Chodesh so-and-so, this month, this Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh Kislev, Yehiyah Machar, B'Yom Rishon. Rosh Chodesh of Kislev will be tomorrow, Sunday. And I think that's why they chose a portion of the prophets to read for Erev Rosh Chodesh. Now comes the wrinkle in that. There are a couple of times of the year. First of all, I did a calculation once. Between 1 and 3 times we can have a 29th of a month on Shabbat with what I called the Mochar Chodesh situation. Of those, we don't always read the special Haftorah for Mochar Chodesh, because just as it preempts the regular Haftorah, there are a couple of situations which will preempt it. For example, when Erev Rosh Chodesh Adar or Adar Sheni is a Shabbat, we don't read Mochar Chodesh. Instead, we read Parshat Shkalim, the Haftorah of Shkalim. So too, for Erev Rosh Chodesh Nisan, We don't read Mochar Chodesh. We read HaChodesh, the Haftorah for HaChodesh. And on Rosh Chodesh, the day before, Rosh Chodesh Elul, we are in the period of time between Tisha B'Av and Rosh Hashanah, where the seven Haftarot are called Shiva D'Nechemta, the seven Haftarot of consolation. And we don't break stride in that for Mochar Chodesh. So Mochar Chodesh gets knocked out. So there is, let's call it the inclusive Mochar Chodesh situation, is whenever the 29th of a month is on Shabbat. The exclusive Mochar Chodesh situation is when not only is the 29th of a Jewish month Shabbat, but we read the special Haftorah of Mochar Chodesh. I know that there are some people listening, probably Larry, maybe Flo, but Larry for sure will go for this, and some other listeners as well, Mark, I'm sure, wherever you are. And there are some that, you know, what is he hocking me at Chinik again? And I don't apologize for it. But I just wanted to give you that story, the picture of the Mochar Chodesh situation. There's one more halachic issue, and I don't have time to go into it now, but it's a fun issue, and that's, what do you do when Seudah Shlishit, third Shabbos meal, Shalosh Seudos, extends after dark, and then when you bench, some people have already davened Ma'ariv, said Havdalah, and it's Rosh Chodesh for them. So do you say Alav Yavo? Or, since it's still Shabbat for you, do you say just Ritzeh? Or do you say them both? And all three opinions exist, and the conclusion in Halacha is try to avoid the situation by benching for Shalosh Seudos on this Shabbat before sunset. If you do that, you have no problem. If you eat a significant amount of challah bread before dark, then you also have no problem. It's just Ritzeh for Shabbos. But in order to avoid the opinions that what you add to the benching is determined by the end of the meal, not by the beginning, there is a complication. We'll leave it at that. Let me wish you, in the proper order here, Shabbat Shalom, Chodesh Tov, Lehishtameah.
Shazakin du asavi khayze vi shama be vayze Shazak,
חודש הזה כן והוא עשה מצוי זה וישום הרבי זה כעס עשי וכעס עמך
חוזק עם מלא עם מלא משל עשינו המצוי הזה יעשה בקוש עשינו והוא ישלח למעשה ידינו ישלח במעשי ידינו ברכה מהצלחות
חוזק ימלא משל עשינו המצו יעשה יעשה בקוש עשינו והוא ישלח במעשי ידינו והוא ישלח במעשי ידינו ברכה מהצלחות
Thank you.